Today's episode is brought to you by Alexandra Park BJJ. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a full contact martial art and combat sport that was developed in Brazil in the 20th century. With roots in Judo and Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, has been developed and refined into a unique grappling art with the aim to allow a smaller and weaker individual to beat a bigger and stronger opponent with the application of proper technique. Based in Muswell Hill, North London, Alexandra Park BJJ's classes are designed so that you can develop your fitness levels, balance, coordination and flexibility in a no-pressure environment and to provide the opportunity to start a new sport at a reasonable price. At Alexandra Park BJJ, we aim to be inclusive so that everyone can benefit from this incredible art, not just the athletic or ultra-competitive. To book your free class, head over to alexandraparkbjj.co.uk or email inquiries at alexandraparkbjj.co.uk.
Welcome to Audiobookish, an audiobook review and discussion podcast looking at audiobooks, both big and small, as well as radio plays, narrative podcasts, anything audiobook-ish. This podcast may contain spoilers, rants, curse words, mispronunciations of names and places, and more.
Hello everybody, you're listening to Audiobookish. My name is Fahed Rahman, and as always, I am joined by Poppy Knight.
Hello.
And today we have a guest. His name is Matt Weisgerber. He is a narrator and voice actor who currently has 38 audiobooks available on Audible. He works mostly in the sci-fi and fantasy genres, as well as works aimed at younger audiences. Outside of narration, Matt is currently working on obtaining a master's degree in counselling, and he is a lover of retro video games. And you can find more about Matt on his website, which is mattweisgerber.com. So thank you for recording the podcast with us today. How are you doing, Matt?
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Okay, cool. So when we tend to have guests on the podcast, we like to ask them about their five favourite audiobooks. So in no particular order, what's on your list?
So I've got my list of books here, a good combination of some nonfiction that's really affected me and also some fiction that I really love. So I will just start kind of in descending order. So number five of my favorite books is a psychology book, nonfiction called No Bad Parts, written by Dr. Richard Schwartz and narrated by Charlie Meckling. As you mentioned, like I'm a student of psychology, counseling psychology in particular. I just have always been drawn to the subject. And this particular book, in terms of subject matter, is really interesting because it describes sort of a therapy, which is called the internal family systems model. And it's just a really fascinating way to go about mental health therapy that's different from the standard sort of talk therapy that people are used to when they think of therapy. And looking at the narration by Charlie Meckling, he does a great job in conveying this kind of somewhat out there healing modality, but he does it in a way that's really approachable. He really feels like he understands the method that he's talking about. And it's also really interesting that it's interspersed with some exercises you can do, which are narrated by Dr. Schwartz himself, which really helps drive home sort of the theories that he's expounding.
Okay, that's interesting. I've read a kind of few psychological, is that the right word?
Sure.
Self-help books. And how did you get on with that, with the exercises? Because when I am listening to self-help books in audio, I do tend to find myself not doing the exercises, where if it's in like a written form, I might be tempted to do them a bit more. So how did that work for you?
So I found that they worked really well because the whole point of IFS, just really quickly, is about your mind is seen as being made of parts, right? So it's a really intuitive modality because we use that language a lot in everyday life. Like, oh, there's a part of me that didn't really want to do that or didn't like that or whatever. So this is all about understanding the different parts of your mind. So the exercises are really, they seem really basic, And they're just easy to get involved with because they're so basic. It just involves sort of listening to your mind. It's hard to describe in a brief period, but in this book, they give you a lot of time to sort of respond when Dr. Schwartz is asking you to do something. You get a pretty good amount of time to really reflect and do the exercise. So I found it was not difficult to sort of play along with the audiobook.
Okay, that's interesting. And in your bio, it mentions that you're studying counseling. And do you think like this book's going to affect your practice going forwards?
Absolutely. I've actually started seeing my own IFS therapist in town here, partly because of this book, partly because of some work I was doing in school. And it was really great. So that's why this book's on my list, because of it's such a great book and it's had such a big impact on me.
Yeah, definitely. And do you find, is the book kind of pitched at kind of people like you who are studying psychology, or is it pitched at anyone, you know, looking for help in their life, that kind of thing? What kind of level is it at, or audience?
Yeah, it's definitely written for like as like a popular psychology book. So it is written for anybody. It's not an academic book by any means. It was actually recommended to me by a former teacher and friend of mine, Susan Roman. And it was just, it clicked. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that it just resonated with me right away. You know, it's definitely very accessible, even if you have no psychology background.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions I've got about that, you mentioned the author narrates some parts and then they've got an actual narrator doing the other bits. How did that kind of work? Did you wish like the actual author narrated all of it? Do you think that kind of balance worked well?
So this might be my bias as a student of psychology, but I've watched a lot of therapy sessions and you really do not get a better person to showcase a modality than the person who sort of invented it's not the right word, but the person who kind of pioneered it. So in that sense, I think that having Dr. Schwartz sort of interject and do these exercises with you, it provides a greater level of connection to the material, I think. It didn't come across as distracting for me. Mm. I didn't find myself sort of wishing that Charlie Meckling was doing the whole thing. You know, Dr. Schwartz isn't a narrator. He's not an actor, but it definitely sounds like he works in this book the same way that he works in a regular session that I've watched.
Oh,
so
okay.
It is really, you're really getting as close to a real IFS therapy session as you can get in this audiobook, which I really valued.
Yeah, I guess you sort of feel transported in those activity sections to being in a session, right? As opposed to just learning about it. And then, the narrator takes up those bits. So that's kind of cool. You also mentioned about that, about how it felt like the narrator really knew what he was talking about, even though obviously not being the actual author that wrote it and stuff like that. Is that something that you found on any books that you've read? Have you found you've kind of had to do some extra research because you've kind of like struggled with not being as informed on the actual subject matter when you first got the job? Or has there been times when it's been really great to work on something that you already had like prior knowledge of? Yeah, have you got any experience related to that?
Oh, dear Lord, yes. So I did a book recently. I didn't do it recently. It came out recently. It's Crows and Ravens, it's called. And it's about crows and ravens in the context of like pagan religions and things like that.
Oh,
so
interesting.
It was very interesting. And I knew nothing about that material going in. So that's fiction is my passion, but nonfiction is great as well, because you get to learn all these things that you never encounter otherwise. And there's one chapter in particular, it talks about crows and ravens in the context of Celtic religion. Mm. And let me tell you, as a North American person, you can't fake your way through, especially pronouncing those words. It's spelled like cat, C-A-T, but you say it like flarg or something, and it's not intuitive. So the pronunciation's huge for me, and also just like kind of getting a handle on like where that material is coming from and the context of the religion and everything. So yeah, definitely. And especially with nonfiction, you always have to make sure you understand the material. Otherwise, it's just you're not going to feel connected to the work, and you're not going to sound connected to the work. So absolutely, all the time, pretty well every book, there's that degree of needing to do a bit of research and really make sure you're understanding what you're narrating.
Mm.
That's interesting. I kind of like the pronunciations. Is that something you work on with with the producer or the writer? How do you kind of get that process right to make sure that you're pronouncing things correctly?
Well, there's a lot of great sites out there that can help. So like the first most common one is just Merriam-Webster for standard English words. You've got Forvo, which is really great for learning foreign words, especially. They have native speakers that will record themselves saying the words. And, you know, in the context of fiction, if you've got sci-fi or fantasy, which I've done a lot of, it's necessary there to really get some input from the author to be like, you invented these words, how do I say them? Because I'm going to get it wrong, certainly.
Okay, that's fascinating. What's the next book on your list?
I got really into, over the summer, listening to memoirs of actors.
Mm.
I had a credit, and I just kept seeing that Matthew McConaughey book on the front page of Audible. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll get it. And I loved that one. I loved all the ones I've listened to, but Treo was the last one I listened to, and that one was my favorite. It tells the story, of course, of actor Danny Treo, who's been in a ton of movies, Machete being his most well-known. He's been in Spy Kids, a bunch of other stuff. He holds the record, I think, for most on-screen deaths of any actor in film, which is really great. So it tells the story of his life, and it's so interesting because he started, he was living a life of crime, and he turned it all around. He not only is an actor, he does addiction counseling, which I thought was really great. And what makes this book so interesting to me, if you go on Audible and you just listen to the sample, right, it's on a technical level, his narration isn't great. Like, he's stumbling over words. He is very clearly, at times he's adjusting his glasses or something and his hands in front of his face.
Mm.
But as you listen to it, because it's a person who is telling their own story, it just grows on you. It's just like, I don't care that all that's happening. I want to hear more about this person's life. And I definitely would not have been interested if anybody else was telling this story, because they just wouldn't have the credibility to tell a story like this. And it was one of those books I just couldn't put it down.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? That, autobiography, obviously, being served by the person who wrote it, who it's about, is really important. And yes, sometimes can make up for the narration not being as fluid and stuff like that. And it's interesting, especially, isn't it, when kind of really famous and very talented actors for screen and stage and things like that find narration difficult. You know, it doesn't come as naturally.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, just to cut across you there, Matt, there was one book that we did recently by Bob Mortimer. He's kind of quite a famous comedian / comedy actor over here. And he's brilliantly funny on radio, in podcasts and on TV. Mm-hmm. But he clearly was struggling with some of the breathing techniques of reading out loud. And that did kind of, I think for both me and Poppy, when we were reviewing, it did kind of take away slightly. So I find it quite interesting that I wouldn't say, from the sounds of it, it doesn't sound that the kind of mistakes that Danny was making when he was narrating his own book kind of you found more endearing than distracting.
I personally did. I mean, there's certainly, I had to look at the reviews, which I don't normally do, but I had to look and see, there's got to be people that didn't like this. And of course there were, but I didn't find that to be an issue at all. And to just touch on what you just said, last month we had the Audio Producers Association conference, which is the big audiobook conference. And a bunch of casting directors were giving a talk, and they mentioned how oftentimes they've had big name Hollywood actors come in to do an audiobook. And they go out and they're just like, I don't ever want to do that again.
Yeah.
That was real hard. It's a different skill set, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I had a small part in a short film recently. It was the first one I'd ever done. And it's different. The skills don't all transfer. You've got to learn a whole different set of tools to bring with you. So, but definitely can provide some interesting narration. In the case of Treo, the sort of rawness of it does, to me, draw you in a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And even with the Bob Mortimer one, I think we both felt that he was still the only person who could tell that story.
Yeah.
So, definitely. And kind of what you're saying there about, being a different skill and you know, having to learn that and things like that. Do you find that now, you know, you are so experienced with narration and stuff like that, do you find it harder to listen to things for pleasure because you pick up on those mistakes that now you've had to learn not to do, that kind of thing? I don't know, do you find your ear is more attuned, or yeah, you're more sensitive to mistakes that maybe as a casual listener before this career you wouldn't have noticed?
To a degree, I think that the shortest answer would be yes and no. But there's certainly stuff that I'll pick up on. I'm just like, oh, that sounds like you might have you tripped over that word a little bit. But because it's such a varied field, like no two people will narrate a book the same way. You can always, like, as a performer, you can focus on, like, how are they doing this narration differently than I would? And that's what can be really fun, is just like, oh, I would have never thought to do it that way. Those are the really fun moments. It's like, oh, I should remember that that person did that, because now if that comes up for me later on, I might be able to apply that to my work or something like that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What was, talking about Danny's book, what was kind of the most memorable sequence in his life story for you? Kind of mentioned that he was like a criminal, then now obviously he's had this kind of incredibly successful acting career, and obviously what was kind of like the main kind of takeout story that stood out to you in his book?
There's a lot. he had a very storied life, but what was always very touching to me, and I won't relay it all here, I think he is the best person to talk about it, but his relationship with his son and how addiction affected that relationship, and how eventually, fortunately, it was overcome, and they ended up, they've got a film coming out, I think, actually pretty soon, that the son directed, that sounds really great. So just to sort of, that story between father and son is sort of peppered throughout the book. And that was always the one I found myself really getting invested in. Like, I hope this kid turns it around. And it's just a really, I don't know, I don't want to say heartwarming story. That sounds like a really like cliche thing to say, but it is.
That's fascinating. What is the next book on your favorites list?
Okay, so now that's it for nonfiction. We've got three fiction pieces. So number three is going to be The Institute, which is, of course, written by Stephen King and narrated by Santino Fontana. And this book is great. Of course, that's why it's on my list. I am a big fan of Stephen King. I could have populated this whole list with Stephen King books, and it would have been a very boring podcast. this one is really gripping. It's about this kid who has these sort of low-level psychic powers, gets kidnapped by a secret organization and is held against his will. It's not necessarily, you know, you can probably think of a lot of stories that are similar to that in a lot of ways, but this one, it's told from a lot of perspectives. And, you know, Poppy and I were talking just before the podcast about your recent review, and I've already forgotten the name of it, the mammoth book. Tusks of Extinction. And you talked about how that book had two different narrators for the different perspectives of the book, and you didn't necessarily feel that it was warranted. And in this book, the story is told from so many different perspectives. You have more than one of the children within the Institute. They get to sort of be the main character at different parts. You get to see the story from adults in the story that are sort of imprisoning these kids, or the ones that are helping them. And you have all these different perspectives. And Fontana is just so good at conveying each one convincingly, and not overdoing it with voices, but just really getting the characters down. And it really shows like the power that a narrator can have if they're able to tell that story convincingly, and get all those characters right. And a big thing in this book that I have not heard before or since that's very interesting to me, and I listened to this before I was narrating professionally, and I picked up on it. I was like, oh, that's really weird. Certain chapters, he will actually alter his voice a bit when doing the narration. So not just the dialogue, he will sort of change it if it's from the perspective of a different character. And I thought that, I have not heard that before. It's so weird. But I feel like in this context, in this book, it works, because nothing is overdone. And all of the dark stuff that happens, all the happy stuff that happens, it's all just weaved together in such a brilliant way. I really love that book.
How do you mean he changed his voice? I'm assuming you're not meaning he just changed. He didn't go on like to a character voice or change his accent. How do you mean that he they change their...
You know, it is a bit of a character voice. Like, he has... Okay. The character voice for there's a character in there called the Bag Lady, who's this like unhoused woman who's like, she's crazy, you know, all that stuff. And he doesn't fully voice the narration, but there is like a slight change in his voice when the story is told from her perspective.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've encountered that, either of you, in any other audiobooks, but in this one, I found that it was not intrusive or anything like that.
It's something that I find really fascinating. So it was one of the things that I really liked about one of my uni modules. And I remember it talking about perspective and that same kind of thing that you can be third person narration, but you can be very much just the perspective of a character and you're very windowed into just theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can be like a narration that zooms in and zooms out of these different perspectives and like how complex that can be in a written text.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you add audio into the mix, it gets even more complicated. And yeah, that's something that's I definitely find really interesting, and that it becomes a challenge for what did narrators do, and it comes up occasionally in prep, but it's really interesting to have that example where it really is evident that the narrator has responded to it in the performance. So I'd be really intrigued to listen mm-hmm. to it and sort of, yeah, like analyze where they've chosen to change it and for what reason and stuff like that. That sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah, and that's, again, at the APA conference this year, we had a talk about a similar subject. I think it's actually the same subject. How omniscient is the narrator?
Exactly,
Are you able to see into the mind of like every mm-hmm. character in a section, or is it just focused on the one? And then that influences how the narration is done and how even just as a reader reading a physical copy or ebook or whatever, how you sort of interpret what's going on. And so that's a whole other level of decisions. I thought it was a very brave choice because it's something that could easily have been overdone with the use of character voices.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want it to sound too, like if it's third person, you know, if it isn't that character, you wouldn't want it to sound too much like them. But yeah, giving some of that character and flavor of them, I imagine really helps with that kind of perspective stuff.
Yeah, I think it does in this case.
Awesome. Something for our listeners who might be intrigued by that, but obviously, you know, Stephen King and Reputation, how spooky is it? I think we need your spooky level of review.
So on the spookiness scale, I would put this one, it's not as spooky as other works. I would compare it more to like Shawshank or The Green Mile.
Awesome.
It's very much like a more of a prison drama than it is mm-hmm. A horror drama. Although it is certainly a heavy book in terms of, you know, kids get hit a lot in it. So, you know, keep that in mind. But yeah, definitely I would compare it more to like a prison movie or book than
awesome.
Something else.
You've sold it even more to me.
And how long is the Institute? Because I know Stephen King, his books can tend to be a little bit on the longer side.
Yeah, I don't.
Sometimes, but yeah.
I don't remember fully. I don't think it's certainly not as long as The Stand, which I listened to years ago.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Was that like 40 hours, something like that?
Yeah, something ridiculous. Yeah.
It looks to me like it's coming in at 19 hours. So,
okay,
yeah.
Great. Yeah, half
significantly
as long as The Stand.
Less than that, but still a relatively big boy if you don't listen to long ones.
It's not a full work week you need to dedicate to listening to.
Yeah. How did you kind of come across the Institute? You mentioned that with Danny Trejo's book, you kind of saw an audible. Was that a similar sort of story here, or were you just kind of looking for Stephen King books to listen to?
Well, you know, I get into that mood around October, you know, Halloween. I got to have something. So I was like, all right, what's Stephen King got? I got to branch out a bit more with that, I know. But I really love his books. So I'm like, okay, what's out there? And this book had come out relatively recently, I think. So I was just like, all right. That's it. That's all I got to hear. And I never looked back. Great book.
Nice. And do you kind of always listen to Stephen King? Did you start reading Stephen King in kind of like print/ebook? Or how's your kind of relationship with the format and his stories?
Sure. Yeah, that was actually in high school. I had checked out Misery from the library at my school, and it was the fastest I had ever read a book. I just really loved it. And from then on, I just would get any book I could get my hands on. And, you know, Stephen King, he's such a prolific author. They're not all hits. I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the go-to. It's a very safe bet. You know what I mean? You're not going to break any ground by saying, I like Stephen King. But they're just, you know, when he hits, man, it hits hard. So, like, yeah, that's it. It's just he's been around so long. And he's been in my life for so long. When I started listening to audiobooks, I was like, all right, I'll start there. Start with the mm-hmm. safe bet and try to branch out as time goes on.
Awesome.
And how did you kind of start listening to audiobooks? Because like both me and Poppy have got slightly different journeys. Like audiobooks mm-hmm. has been like a long time thing in Poppy's life. She listened to them mm-hmm. while she was growing up. With me, it was kind of a bit more of a recent thing. So mm-hmm. what was kind of like your history like with audiobooks?
Yeah, so I've done some like menial sort of manual labor jobs throughout my life. This was around a period where I was doing like pesticide application for the city that I lived in. And so, you know, you're going around there, you've got a lot of time sort of by yourself. And so I was just like, well, I've run out of stand-up comedy albums and podcasts I want to listen to. I've got a lot of time on my hands here. Why don't I pick up an audiobook? So the first one that I listened to was Salem's Lot. And cannot remember right now who the narrator was, but that was like, this is great. My first experience with an audiobook. And it was just, I don't know how you both sort of felt the first time you had heard a really good audiobook, but like the way that you're drawn into it, it's similar but different than how you're drawn into a book that you're reading physically, right?
Yeah.
When you read a book, you can have this intense emotional reaction to it, of course, but in an audiobook, you're kind of being guided through the book. And so the reaction to it that you tend to have is different because, you know, characters don't sound or act necessarily the way they do in your mind. And I just thought that was so interesting to have some of those elements kind of curated for you as opposed to coming up with it all yourself. It's just it's a different way to experience prose. And I just loved it immediately.
That's great. And is that kind of that part of the reason why you decided to start narrating? So how did you get into narrating audiobooks?
You know, I would love to say like I've always wanted to narrate audio, but really I remember being in an early acting class, a voice acting class. And this was before I had worked with any coaches, before I had gotten any professional work. And there was a guy next to me and he said, when we were introducing ourselves, like, I'd really like to narrate audiobooks. And I just thought, my God, I would never want to do that. Like the amount of work that must be, oh my God. But after I worked with a couple of coaches, starting with Ron Rubin in Toronto, and then I was referred to Susan Roman, who I mentioned before, for audiobook coaching. And that was when I was pointed to ACX, which is where a lot of narrators get their start. And I booked something right away, which is very lucky. And it was just once I finally got into it and started doing it and realized, like, I get to, you know, character work is my real passion, and I get to play characters I would never get cast as in anything else, you know, like the grizzled cop sort of character. I'm never going to get cast as that, but I can do that in audiobooks, and I can explore a lot of different characters within the same work. And so that was kind of the jumping off point when I first started doing this work. And that's been my primary work in voiceover, and it's been, I definitely look back at when I thought I would never want to do that. I'm just like, yeah, this is like the best thing right now for me.
Yeah, awesome.
That's awesome. And kind of the next book on your list?
Yeah, so I have number two is going to be the classic Lolita, written by Vladimir Nabokov and narrated by Jeremy Irons.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so this book is like itself is like 100 years old almost or something, like a very, very old book. And I'm not generally smart enough to read classics, but I listened to a podcast by a comedian named Jamie Loftus, who did kind of a deep dive into the history of the book and how it has been received and everything. And I was just like, well, I've seen the Kubrick movie. Maybe I'll give this book a listen now. And so anybody who doesn't know, like Lolita, again, I don't know why child abuse is such a common thread in these books I picked, but it's about this horrid man named Humbert, who has, he's reflecting on this really sexually abusive relationship he's had with this girl, this 12-year-old girl. And it's his reflection of their time together. And obviously, very heavy subject matter, not something you want to go into if you're not ready for it. But if you're getting that urge to see something that's like a car crash where you just can't look away, that is this book. And that is this performance by my Jeremy Irons, who famously did play the character Humbert Humbert in the Adrian Lyne film in the 90s. And to have a narrator who has portrayed this character physically to now come in and portray that character's internal life as well, I think that just adds to it immensely. It is such a fantastic and beautiful and simultaneously grotesque performance and depiction of this just horrid character. You really feel all of the moments of Humbert's jealousy and his infatuation with this child, and just the way that that progresses and the way that Irons is able to do that in a way that's never over the top. It's so engrossing in a way that few books can be. And part of that is owed to the prose as well, written as from the perspective of the famous unreliable narrator, of course.
And are there other characters that have dialogue in this? So does Jeremy Irons have to do their voices as well? And how does he do that? Or is it all just kind of his internal reflections?
Yeah, so there's not a ton of dialogue, but there is some. There aren't too many characters in the book, but I love it so much, I can't remember her name. But Dolores's mother, who is, I can only picture Shelley Winters from the Kubrick movie, but he voices her a few times. And that was interesting for me because this was, again, early in my career. And when he voices her, he actually, your instinct as a man is always to like bring your voice up a little bit when you're voicing women. But he brings it down a little bit. Oh, hello, Mr. Humbert. And it's of course not just pitch, it's in inflection and all that. But yeah. I thought that was really interesting. I was like, I'm going to use that. He also voices Claire Quilty, who is sort of the antagonist character who pops in every so often. But most of the book is first person, Humbert's reflection on his relationship with this, well, exploitive relationship with this child.
Yeah, well, that's really good to know, though, that, yeah, his performance, when it is called for those dialogue bits, really comes through well. Mm-hmm. And I completely agree with you. Like, I've definitely heard male narrators doing female voices and also female narrators doing male voices where, yeah, it's the change in pitch and it's cheesy and it doesn't really work and it feels awkward. Mm-hmm. Whereas, yeah, it's more about the tone. You know, you don't have to go higher for a female, lower for a male. As long as you're getting across their character, then your listeners will believe that they're hearing the character. That's certainly what I've found anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a really important point from a performance perspective. Like, for anybody who does voice acting in general, like, a lot of people, you know, myself included, you like to do voices and people tell you, oh, it's great, you should be a voice actor. But a voice isn't the same as a character. Like, a voice can help you sell a character, for sure. A voice can sometimes be called for, but at the end of the day, if you don't know that character, you don't know their emotional background, sort of what they want out of an interaction, it's going to come across a lot of the times as a caricature or just like this really hollow character, not even a character. I mean, nobody is defined by the sound of their voice.
Yeah.
That's just not how it is. So a very important point that you brought up there, I think.
Yeah, I really like the way you put that there. Yeah, definitely. And then also on this, so given that you'd seen a film version of this and then gone to the audiobook, how did you find that? Did you find yourself kind of like thinking back to scenes of the film? Were they kind of flashing in your brain? How do you feel in general about kind of, yeah, film and then listening or film and then reading and stuff like that? And how did you find it for this one?
Sure. I mean, I think it's pretty universal that the film version of a book never captures everything that the book does. And the Kubrick version is famously quite different from the book. It's actually very interesting because I watched the movie again after listening to the book. And it's interesting that the lines from the book that make it into the movie, they're very, very innocuous lines that aren't, I wouldn't say are terribly important. But that movie anyway is quite different. I haven't seen the Adrian Lyne version, actually. But yeah, it was very interesting to encounter that story and just see how different it is. And it's been called an unfilmable book for a number of reasons. And I don't know how, I'm not a filmmaker. I don't know how you do it, but I don't know. The book definitely hits a lot harder with the abhorrence of its main character.
Interesting.
Yeah, but Lilith is always a book of being kind of a bit reluctant to approach just due to the subject matter, but it is kind of repeatedly on like the best written books of all time list just because of how beautifully the prose is written. That for me, there's kind of, it's still kind of a big repulse just due to the subject matter of the book. What made you choose to kind of listen to it?
I think because, well, having seen the movie, having listened to this podcast, what Jamie Loftus talks about a lot in that podcast is how the book is often misinterpreted in a number of ways. Like the way that it's written, and it is a grotesque story, but it is beautifully written. And because Humbert sees his relationship with Dolores as being a relationship. This is a romantic relationship between two people. And that's not what it is. But it's written in that way. And so that's a big part of why it's often misinterpreted as a love story, which it's not. I don't know. I'm often drawn to characters like that are so abhorrent. And this is a very unique book in that it is told from the villain's perspective, basically. And that has always just been something that's fascinated me. And it just works. When I was in university, I had to read a paper that was... It was this journal entry written by a real life pedophile, and I won't go into detail about what he said, but it is fascinating how Nabokov was able to capture the mindset of somebody like that in his prose. I don't know. Again, like I say, you have to be in the mindset of like, I want to read what the life of this horrible person is like to enjoy a book like this. This is not something you pick up for an easy read or an easy listen on a weekend or a vacation or something like that. It is challenging in many ways, but if it's something that you're looking for, it's worth it, I think, to push through that.
Yeah, fascinating. It's quite interesting you used the word like enjoy, because there's certainly been a couple of books that we've listened to on the podcast where we've taken a lot from it, but we've not necessarily enjoyed it. But it's still kind of like worth listening to. And I think enjoyment doesn't necessarily need to be the ultimate goal, like anything you read or listen to, so long as you're kind of taking something from it.
And it depends too on the material. Like there are movies that I've seen, for example, that like they will show something that's like really violent or something, and I don't like seeing that. I'm like, did you need to show me that? Like, could you not have like cut away? I think what works in this book, or at least what helps mitigate the discomfort in Lolita, is just the fact that there's never any explicit descriptions of abuse, because it's just not necessary and it's not gratuitous. And that is something that I really appreciate. And a lot of work, I think, in other books, other movies, whatever, they show things that they don't necessarily need to show or talk about or anything like that, because it doesn't really matter other than the, I don't know, shock value of it or something. So that is definitely something that I dislike, you know, violence for its own sake or something that's supposed to be shocking that's just put there for its own sake. And this book, I don't think, does that. At least for me, it didn't. But it certainly is worth bringing up that there's a lot of books that do that, and it can make the experience just unpleasant. And it's like, yeah, great, you made me feel unpleasant. That's what you wanted. I don't want that.
Yeah.
Great. We're coming to the last book on your list.
Yeah, so this is my favorite audiobook, and it's just as dreary as the other two. again, I really wanted to not talk about another Stephen King book, but I had to. This is Pet Sematary, of course, written by Stephen King, and it's narrated by Michael C. Hall, who...
Dexter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, yes, you have to bring that. Yeah. Dexter, that's the number one, I think. What else is that? 6 Feet Under. He's done some film work, and I really wish he would do more audiobooks, because this, for me, is just one that I have. I still think about it. I've listened to it a while ago, and I still think about it. I think it is just the best example of narration that you can get. And he's only done 3 audiobooks. He did this one. He did Breakfast at Tiffany's, and he did a short story in Stephen King's Skeleton Crew. I think those are the only books he's done. He's very much an actor who does not overact. And I think for audiobooks, that is just, for me anyway, what I like to listen to and what I like to bring to my work is just that level of, I don't know, level-headedness. There's always this sense when he is speaking that there's always something that he's holding back, like a secret that he's keeping or something like that. And especially for a book like this, which, contrary to The Institute, is far more skewed towards the spookiness side. I think most people have some experience with Pet Sematary by this point. just engrossing. The way that he portrays characters, young and old, children, adults, the classic, we don't go up there no more, you know, that guy. Just, again, it was a book that I got through super quickly because it's just so hard to, I want to know what happens next. I want to know how he, I want to know what he's going to do next. It's just, I love that book. I wish I could listen to it for the first time again.
Fantastic compliment to give to a book. One of the kind of like side questions that I sometimes ask is, what speed do you tend to listen to your audio books on? Because I have been known to go to like 2x speed, sometimes 2x.
I don't know about that. No, I will listen at 1x speed because that is how people talk. I understand, though, like there have been times I've listened to a book a little bit faster if I'm trying to just get information or something.
Yeah.
But I can't do fiction like that. Number one, I'm going to lose my place, first of all. Second of all,
I want to get to the next bit, Matt. That's like, you need to get to the next bit quickly.
Yeah, but you gotta wait. You can't dive into that turkey before it's fully cooked. You're gonna get salmonella. You can't watch a movie at 2x speed. That's not gonna work. I don't know. Like you do,
you're
you
get salmonella. That is brilliant.
I'm not judging. I mean, I sound like I'm judging. I'm not judging. But no, I am a 1x speed person 98% of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably the way I listen to audiobooks is probably quite reminiscent of the way that I eat food. I just kind of, I don't tend to save my food. I tend to kind of scoff it down my throat as quickly as I can. But yeah.
Fair enough.
You mentioned in Michael's performance that it was like restrained, I think is kind of what I got from it. And you mentioned the way that he was narrating, it sounded like he's always kind of trying to keep something back. With Lolita, you kind of mentioned kind of Jeremy Irons, and when I think of Jeremy Irons, I kind of do think of like over the top bombastic scenery chewing performances, in especially in some of his more recent films. How does the kind of like the idea of, you know, when you hear someone like Jeremy Irons or Michael C. Hall, how does like your preconceptions of what their previous stuff that they've done kind of influence what you're expecting to hear from them when you're listening to the audiobook?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know that it overly does beyond the name recognition, because it's a different medium. You're not seeing them. You're not seeing their facial expressions or their movements, or they're not performing with other actors. I don't know that it really does. I guess, you know, when you first listen to a sample before you get a book or whatever, it's just like, oh, that's the Lion King guy, or that's the Dexter guy. But then, you know, as the story unfolds, you get into it, you ease into their pacing and all that, and you find I just stop thinking about that eventually. It's like, this is the piece, this is how they're narrating it, and the other work that they've done is in many ways irrelevant, I think, at least for myself, in terms of audiobook listening.
That's fascinating. In terms of why this particular book's at the top of your list, is like Pet Sematary your favorite Stephen King story, or is it kind of the mixture of like the story and Michael's narration that kind of puts it at the top of your list?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's my favorite story by Stephen King. Probably Misery, which I have listened to the audiobook version of that, and that's a fantastic book too. I also really love Cujo, which I know is narrated by Lorna Raver. But Pet Sematary, I think that there's some sort of like, I don't know, aspirational aspect to my loving this book. The way that he narrates is the way that I want to narrate a book. And so I hear the way that he's, you know, you see it in Dexter as well, how he was very rarely over the top. He's always like, there's something underneath. And especially in an audiobook where you got to listen to somebody for 10, 20, 40 hours if you're listening to The Stand, and just how much that helps the work. To not lay everything out right away, to just slowly feed people, to use the food analogy again, to feed that performance and that story in a way that never gets tiring, that never gets uninteresting, and there's still room to surprise you as the story unfolds. Like, I don't know, the way that he portrays the grief and sadness of the father who's taking his son to the pet cemetery, or near the ending where I'm so bad with names, but the main character and his wife are like, the wife is trying to get back to stop him from doing what he's doing, and all the tension that Hall is able to bring to that. It's so varied and nothing feels out of place.
Okay, so I've not read Pet Sematary. Is there kind of, you mentioned in the Institute, and Stephen King does do this in a lot of his books where he does have different points of view. Is that something that happens in Pet Sematary?
No, this one is almost entirely from the perspective of the main character, whose name I don't remember. He's some guy, he's a doctor. Like I say, there's some parts of it where it is told from his wife's perspective. So that style of narration from the Institute wouldn't have worked here, because the narrator is a bit more omniscient, and it's more focused on that one character in this one.
And just going back to what you were saying about kind of like, it's an aspirational narration and stuff like that. Is it one that you go back to and re-listen to kind of, learn from that? Is it one that you go back to and re-listen just for the fun of it? Or is it not one that you really kind of keep re-listening to, or do you not re-listen to audiobooks?
Yeah, I don't often re-listen to audiobooks. I've re-listened to parts of it. As Viola Davis said in her fantastic memoir, you learn less from studying other actors than you do sort of just figuring out who you are as a performer. And I agree with that mostly, but you can, I think anyway, at least for audiobook narration, you can glean stuff from other actors. Mm-hmm. So I again love the restraint that Hall shows in this narration. And so there have been times, not often, but once or twice, where I have kind of gone back and been like, I know I really like this book, and I want to see, like, okay, what did he do here? What did I like about it? So there's some elements of that, but you don't want to get too marred in, like, trying to be somebody else, because that never works out.
Interesting, yeah.
So just a couple of questions to finish off. What does success look like to you? And you can take that as macro or micro as you want.
Sure. That's a great question. I think that in life in general, you're successful if you are content. Money is important to everybody. You need it to live. But if you're living life in a way where you're able to do stuff that energizes you, that you enjoy, and you're able to fill as much of your life with those things as possible, that to me is success. Mm-hmm. I'm coming to you now from a small, a two-bedroom apartment in Calgary. I am not wealthy, but I really am content because I'm pursuing audiobook narration, which is a passion of mine. I'm pursuing psychology, which is a passion of mine. And so to me, that's the measure of success. How much are you enjoying your life?
And I think that's a pretty fantastic answer. Can you just remind our listeners where they can find you on the internet, social media, and all that good stuff?
Sure. Well, I'm having a really fortunate year. There's a lot of great projects on the go. If you want to come find me, check them out. Check out my work, my site, whatever. I'm over on Instagram at Matt's Dumb Voice. Also on TikTok under the same handle. Those are the places I'm most active. You mentioned my site, which is mattweisgerber.com. You can get links to that all over the social media. You can see what I'm doing over there. So come on over.
Is there anything else that you'd like to plug?
Well, I've got a couple on the go right now. So for Tantor Media, I'm doing a book 6 of a lit RPG series called Heroes of the Final Frontier, which is sort of a, well, it's a lit RPG. It's a fantasy story about these people who are playing this virtual reality video game. So it's about their lives, mostly in the game, but also outside of the game a little bit, which I had never encountered a book like that before this series, so it was really fascinating to get a hold of that. And also I've got this great horror fiction piece called His Blood coming out in a few probably in a couple of months, which is a really interesting and fun take on vampires, so still a lot of fun.
That's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. It's been a really great chat. Any closing comments, Poppy?
It has been a really fantastic conversation with you. I found it really interesting. I hope you did as well. I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad. I had a great time as well. Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Good. And I want to know if our listeners listen to their audiobooks like they eat their food. So let us know.
Okay.
Comment.
Right. Get in touch.
Cool. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please continue to support the podcast by leaving a rating or review wherever you find us. If you want to give us a follow on social media, you can find us at Audio Bookish Pod. That's our handle across everything, I think. And if you want to email us with any questions, queries, or if you want to be a guest on the podcast, you can email us at audiobookishpod@gmail.com. And we've got a Patreon and Ko-fi account as well. Thank you very much, Matt. Let's say bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.